it will be better for us if we can win by a landslide, because then there just should be no question about who the winner is going to be. And we have to push for that, I think, in a really big way.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Jen Ancona is a co-founder and vice president of Way to Win, a progressive donor collaborative that seeks to advance progressive victory in battleground states. Jen works on strategic communications and their plan to win. Jen brings experience in communications, donor organizing, political strategy, and multiracial coalition building. She previously served as vice president at the Women Donors Network, consultant at Democracy Alliance, legislative aide in the California State Assembly, and reporter for the Los Angeles Times. I was happy to have the chance to talk to Jen, to hear about Way to Win and their role in funding and assisting around 80 groups that are key parts of the progressive infrastructure. You should listen. So, after a quick word from our sponsor, this is Jen Ancona and Way to Win.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Jen, would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Absolutely. So I am a native Californian. Originally, I was a journalist. So I started my career as a local news reporter, and I ended up working at the LA Times. And I was a student journalist. So I have always been a writer and a journalist. Around 2002 and 2003, I decided to leave journalism. And it was partially because of the media environment at the time. And it was partially because I was really kind of radicalized by George W. Bush's early presidency and the aftermath of 9/11, the war in Iraq. And I really felt an urgent desire to be in the streets and be protesting and be doing activism, political activism. But my role as a journalist didn't allow me to do that. And so I changed course. And then from there, I became a political activist. My first campaign was Howard Dean's primary campaign. So I am a old school Deaniac. I was mostly a volunteer, and I worked in their finance fundraising department and did a little brief stint in Iowa for the Iowa caucus, lead up to the Iowa caucus with Dean.
The people with hats.
The people with hats. I was one of them. I have the orange hat to show for it, for sure. And then I started getting involved in my local Democratic Party. I was living in Southern California. I was living in Santa Barbara, and I got involved in the local Democratic Party. I started a club there and was just really active in registering people to vote and in the lead up to the 2004 election. And then from there, I worked in local politics. I worked inside of the state assembly in a local office in Santa Barbara. So I have some experience working as like a legislative aide inside the state house. And then I ended up moving up to the Bay Area, and I ended up getting a job at a group called Power Pack. And that's how I met Steve Phillips, who I don't know if you know. He wrote the book Brown is the New White.
I had him as a recent guest on this show, actually.
Yeah. So we worked together for a few years, and that's where I got into the major donor world and kind of the idea of progressive donor organizing. And that's then what led me to work at the Women Donors Network, where I spent the past 10 years or so from there. So with Women Donors Network, it's a community of individual progressive women across the country. And I, as part of that team, really helped to lead some great, impactful strategies around collective grant making so that Women Donors Network could have more impact in the world. And one of the things we did was coin this term reflective democracy, which is now a little more of a known term around like the vision of a democracy of elected officials that would actually reflect the population, especially in terms of race and gender. So pointing out with data the disparities that existed in elected officials' race and gender, which was a new concept at the time and has really helped push forward the whole conversation about demographics and diversity in politics. And then as part of that, when I was at Women Donors Network, I also then joined forces with Leah Hunt Hendricks, who was the co-founder of Solidaire, which was another progressive donor network, and then Tori Gavito, who is the head of a progressive donor collaborative in Texas called the Texas Future Project. And we collaborated to co-found Way to Win. And that's where I am now. I'm the co-founder and vice president of political strategy at Way to Win.
And I did talk to Tori some time ago about the group. It seemed like it was raising a lot of money and had a strong philosophy, but catch me up with where it is right now as an enterprise, and especially leading up to this very pivotal election.
Yeah, absolutely. So we came together to start Way to Win because all of us in our different from our different perches, we're really feeling the need to do something different after 2016, that we knew that the same old strategies and the same old playbooks that led us to 2016 were not going to work to get us out of this mess. And we all, rather than kind of start our own political strategy, we were aligned enough around our vision that we thought we could join forces and come together and do it together. And so Way to Win has built a really strong community of individual donors, about 140 individual donors from across the country. And we work in partnership with, you know, groups and movement leaders, really deep partnership with movement leaders, both nationally and across the states. And then we also work with a lot of institutions like other funders who are also aligned on this same theory of change, which is really like, if we're going to win both in the near term and in the long term, we have to do a few things. We have to organize people continuously in their communities. You know, we have to make sure that there are organized communities all year round. We have to talk to everyone and not just a narrow slice of likely voters or white swing voters, that the idea of talking to young people and people of color who and women who make up this new majority that's growing, like we actually have to invest in talking to them about politics and talking to them about governing too in the off years, so that we're going and talking to them all the time. And then the idea that we can't cede the battleground to a few states in the Midwest. You know, like we have to go beyond, like we have to look at a map that's going to be bigger, that we have to try to win more power in more places up and down the ballot if we're going to win. So we have a series of partners who are really aligned around that theory, and then we all execute in slightly different ways. But we've really kind of grown and strengthened that. It's that we call it the Win Squad. You know, it's kind of a squad of partners who can team up and help fill important gaps and help raise alarm bells about different things that are happening. So since we have actually founded ourselves in 2017, late 2017, we have moved over almost $85 million in, you know, money that is both 501c3 nonprofit money, as well as more political 501c4 and PAC money. And all of that money has gone out to fund this kind of movement building politics work in about 11 states that we've really focused in on. That's been amazing. And in doing that, I think we've also really helped to shift the center of gravity around what works in winning elections. And the fact that Texas has been put on the map as a toss-up state, and Georgia as well, Like, that's not an accident. And that's the kind of thing that happens from sustained investment over time. And that's where I would really say that we've had success is like, nobody thought that Texas could be on the map when we stood up and said that it could be, you know, and people were very skeptical about Georgia too, but we've really forged ahead with like a belief in the leadership on the ground and like the women of color and the people of color who are really know their communities and know how to win. And they're going to live there in that state, in that city, the day after the election and putting our resources there rather than focusing on like, you know, strategies that are more fly in or pop up. It's kind of really being able to go deep and sustain it. And I think that feels good that we can be in a place like this where a bunch of other factors have come into play. But I don't think that those states would be swing states if that investment over time hadn't been happening.
$85 million seems like a lot of money and probably a lot of work to raise and probably pretty fun to spend if it's on things that you really think matter. Can you talk a little bit about the partners to whom this money goes? I mean, I'm imagining Block in Wisconsin. Who are the types of groups? Can you enumerate some of those?
Totally. We released last year what we call the Plan to Win. And so in 2019, you know, in the lead up to the 2020 cycle, again, the idea that we had to be tracking municipal races across 2019 in order to build up to 2020 to kind of build that support. So we created this Plan to Win, and we created it in conjunction with a lot of the groups that we then would have been funding. And they go really state by state. And then we work with a number of national groups that also work in those states with those groups. So some examples are like in Arizona, there's a group called Living United for Change in Arizona. And they are a statewide group. They focus on a multiracial constituency and multi-issues in the state. They do organizing, they do advocacy, they do narrative building work, and they really help to anchor a number of groups in Arizona that sit at a table that are like led by people of color and are really pushing forward this base expansion theory. We fund a number of those groups. And then those groups helped us build this Plan to Win. So they would tell us the races, the target counties, like the candidates that they care about. And what we've done through the Plan to Win is aggregate that for donors who, you know, want to support that work that's going to win the election and build something for the longer term. But not everybody has access to the level of research or detail that's required to know which groups to fund. And if you want to support this candidate, what are the groups, you know, in that congressional district that you should be funding at the same time that you're funding the candidate campaigns? What we've done is try to train really major donors and all kinds of donors to think about the way they fund politics differently. And we've said, you know, think about it as one-to-one. Like normally it would just be giving to candidate campaigns, which is really important because candidates need funding to get their message out. But if all you do is fund the candidate campaign, you're not leaving anything afterwards, right? At the end of the day, when the candidate's done, the campaign infrastructure goes away. So we want people to be giving at the same time to organizations that also support those candidates, and then we'll be there in a lasting way. I can say a few more if you want. Like in Florida, there's New Florida Majority, there's the Dream Defenders, there's a group called Win Justice, which works in Florida and a number of other states. In North Carolina, there's a group called Advance Carolina, Down Home North Carolina. These are all, you know, multiracial, mostly multi-issue based organizing groups.
How do you locate them? How do you know that they're the right ones? How do you measure how well they're doing? All those tricky questions of the interaction between funders and nonprofits or other political groups.
Yeah. At Way to Win, we really have a philosophy around funding and grant making and this whole world that I think is pretty different, you know, than the norm. So we really lean into trust of the expertise of the people who are doing this work. And so it's very different from a foundation type model that you might be used to, you know. How we would find the groups, it's like all based in relationships and networks. So, you know, going into a state, just knowing from talking to key leaders in that state who the groups are that are making a big difference, going and talking to those groups and finding out who are they working with that they think do really effective work. So it was a lot of due diligence on the front end to create the plan to win. Because the plan to win is really like the one-stop shop that can really lay out for everything we need to win, whether it's the White House, the Senate, Congress, or state houses, that all of these races are actually layered, you know, on top of each other. So when we did our plan to win, we looked at where are the places where you can win electoral college votes, a Senate seat, congressional seats, state house flips, you know, state Senate flips, and build local power at the same time. It's all about trying to find where those things nest. And so the states that we have targeted all have those multiple electoral opportunities. So on the front end of building that plan, we did this deep work and due diligence to find the groups that really are underpinning that work, talk to them extensively, do a site visit with them, like look at their plans, understand how many voters they wanted to reach, what were the tactics they were using. We found about 80 groups in total that are part of this plan to win, with some changes here and there, but it's essentially about 80 groups across these different states. And we are in deep relationship with them, and we talk with them all the time to get information about what's happening, to have that real-time feedback loop. And that was really one of the big problems we were trying to solve, that in 2016, during the election, there really wasn't a good feedback loop between people who are deep in the ground and then people at the top making decisions. And so we did feel like having an aggregated way of seeing that, having it be connected to donors so that we could move money quickly when it needed to, you know, that is a lot of what we do, is like the groups on the ground will, in the states, will tell us what's happening. They'll raise an alarm bell and we respond and we, you know, drive resources to where they need to go. It's a really like relational kind of way of doing funding.
One of the benefits to trust, there seems like there's several. One is that local people often do know better. And if you're not trusting them, you're making them spending their time and resources jump through hoops to like measure their impact and do a lot of things that might not even be their expertise. I guess the downside is sometimes it's really hard to run a group like that. And if you have 80 of them, they can't all be acing it. How do you deal with the maybe small number that don't get it right? Or get it less right?
In the couple years that we've been doing this, I would say we haven't run into that. Different groups might have different kinds of expertise, or there may be different strengths and weaknesses. But I mean, again, like overall, they're moving the ball forward, and we're tracking like the metrics that they're putting forward of like how many voters they want to contact, how many at the time when they used to be able to knock doors, how many doors would they want to knock, or what is their voter universe. And I think that what we've seen is that actually all the groups that we funded have like drastically overperformed. If you look at the numbers that have been happening in the turnout world, like over the last couple of cycles, it's just been huge. So there hasn't been a sense that there has been failure. It's really, I mean, of course you win some elections and you lose some, but overall the turnout numbers have been, you know, really quite strong in a lot of these places. At the same time, it's like, a lot of these leaders are juggling so many different realities, like especially right now with COVID. You know, when it first hit, it was like, yes, we have our whole voter contact program that we need to run, and we have community members who are like getting kicked out of their apartments and don't have food that we have to actually help. So I think given the conditions and everything everyone's up against, we really haven't seen that. I think it's like investing in leaders who are closest to the injustice that we're trying to solve is just like never a bad strategy, is kind of how I see it.
I mean, when I talk to people who know a lot more than I do about that world, they say, well, it's just a chronically underfunded, unappreciated part of the political ecosystem that we way too much steer money towards other aspects of politics. Is that changing substantially with your work, or is it still a serious problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is changing, but I think it is also still a serious problem. You know, we have made a big difference, and all of our partners who we work with in the funding space, we have made a difference in terms of making this space not so underfunded. Like, there's definitely a difference this cycle than last cycle in terms of how much money was being put out to movement groups in political money. There's been a real difference. And at the same time, it's still not enough. And so we do need more partners and more donors to get involved in this space and funding this movement work. One of the things that we have done is really try to understand what the funding gaps are, because sometimes in politics, it feels like it's a never ending, you know, like you always get asked for money from candidates and it's always more and more and more and more. And it's like, when is it enough? And so one of the things we wanted to do was actually say, like, here's what the program gaps are for this cycle. And we did do that work over the last couple months, and we put out that across the 11 states we're in with 80 groups, both in states and nationally, it was about $169 million still left that they were saying was they were needing and to fill their budget gaps. So that's a lot, you know, even looking at what we've already invested, but it's also a fraction of what is getting spent in politics this cycle, which is like $7 billion. So
that's true. 85 million can be a tiny amount or it can be a gigantic amount, depending on how you look at it. What other funders share this sort of theory that you have about how politics ought to be conducted? And who do you think is on the other side and pushing money in ways that you maybe wish they wouldn't?
Well, I think a lot of the aligned partners that we work with are the donor networks that where we started the Way to Win with, a Women Donors Network, Solidaire. These are both really thriving donor networks of individuals who really throw down and who really, like, they really dig deep to fund movement building. Other groups like Movement Voter Project is a really important funder. They've been working even longer than Way to Win, funding grassroots movement work around politics. And they work very broadly across all 50 states and have I think they have 400 grantees. So they really go broad in terms of resourcing grassroots groups across all kinds across the country. There's a lot of really cool foundations like Solidago Foundation, Libra Foundation, a foundation called Vocal, a foundation that's actually sunsetting that is called the Civic Participation Action Fund, has been a really big, important partner. And there's a group called Propel Capital, which has done a lot of kind of post-2016 digital organizing funding. And we also work a lot with them. So that's just some of who we have in our squad. We have like kind of a win squad of partners who really believe in this theory of change, open philanthropy, and a lot of the work that people have been doing on funding prosecutor accountability too. They've been a part of our network. And Steve Phillips Center and others. So all those groups, we work together, we share information as funders. We come together quite often, like I said, to like fill gaps when there's a fire alarm. There was an issue in Florida right after COVID hit where a Florida group told us like we had a $10 million grant from a C3 Foundation that is going to get pulled because we can't meet the voter registration metrics that it required because COVID just hit and we're still figuring out how to actually do that. And so we all rallied together. We sent money there. We also helped like put out there that funders should not be pulling money based on these metrics and that they should give groups time to actually adapt to COVID-19. So that's just one small example, but yeah, that's really great. And then, I mean, in terms of the other side, the most of what we fight against is this tendency to either like pop up something new, you know, like create something new and put all your money into that versus thinking about what's already there and what you can put money into. That's one thing that happens. And then I think the other thing is just like, again, the tendency to go heavier on either all candidate support and not enough movement support, or, I mean, what we used to really be fighting is this tendency to do like parachuting in programs. And that you would definitely see that with like the Democratic Party, like rather than building something local and deep that's going to last, it would be like ballooning up a big staff that you're parachuting into a state and then you're leaving. And that's the kind of behavior, the kind of donor behavior that we are trying to really change. It really should be about how do we actually invest in the people, in the groups that are in the place that we want to ultimately move. And it seems really simple, but it just, honestly, it just doesn't happen enough. And so.
Well, I suspect that sometimes the money isn't there until towards the end. And then people are trying to figure out how to spend it. I'm not an expert in that, but I can imagine, you know, a lot of money is going to come too late for certain strategies.
Exactly. That's a really good point. And that is the other thing that we had tried to solve for, which that whole 80 million that, you know, that's over two cycles. If you just look at this cycle, which is 2019 to 2020, we've put in about 60 million. That just shows how much we believe in early money in order to be able to fund these strategies that work for the longer term.
So if I ask you kind of broadly, how do you think progressives can win in 2020? And what's your strategy? What's the answer?
It's our strategy is like, we want to win by a lot. So it like, no, okay, no I'm longer. It's like, no, we're not going to just win the required number of states and the required number of electoral votes, because we are truly up against a very intense, sustained voter suppression operation. And we know that. And it's 100% part of their strategy is to try to limit people's ability to vote. And so,
can we just say it's cheating?
Yeah, it's full on cheating.
It's anti-democratic cheating. And it is really awful.
It is. And I mean, we found out last week that there's a whole team of people who have been hired by the Trump campaign who work on this cheating plan. There's like more staffers working on that than any other part of the campaign. So it's incredibly scary. And so the things that we can do for voter protection, we've done a lot of those things. So, you know, we've been funding like Stacey Abrams taking on that organization, Fair Fight. They've been working really hard. They were very well funded. For sure, we were part of funding them, but they've been getting so much support across the country. And they've really been building this state-by-state voter protection apparatus that we really, really need. And then there's also been a ton of policy work that's happened in the states by national groups, by state groups, to try to work with local governments, county clerks' offices to make the process as smooth as possible. Where there's been a ton after COVID around vote by mail and that whole voting safely. There's been a lot of effort put into it. But at the end of the day, like, we just can't leave any voter unturned. You know, like, we can't leave any stone unturned. Everyone has to vote. And there's been enough of a history of like talking to more of a narrow audience or universe where you're only talking to likely voters who voted every 4 years, like, or every year, you know, constantly. But there's millions, there's like probably about 40 million voters out there who are already registered to vote, who actually just like, we call them high potential voters because they have voted probably one or two times since 2012. So they're not quote unquote reliable voters, but they are more progressive. They're younger, they're more diverse in general, and they live in all of these major battleground states. And so part of our strategy is like, we have to activate that group. We have to talk to them. They're really a part of the electorate that we need to bring in, while at the same time, we're, you know, persuading the middle and holding that crew. the kind of voters that we need to activate in order to win by a lot. And then the second piece is like fighting in all these states, like Texas, like Georgia. I mean, if we can flip Texas with 38 electoral votes, like that's winning by a lot. It will be better for us if we can win by a landslide, because then there just should be no question, right, about who the winner is going to be. And we have to push for that, I think, in a really big way.
I am with you. I am personally scared that both sides have high potential voters, and that Trump's strategy of scaring the crap out of his and demonizing our side with just tons of misinformation and, you know, a million shenanigans is going to result in very high turnout among his high potential voters, and that we're going to be surprised by how high. And if we don't match that, I think it's going to be a terrible night.
I agree with you. And like, that's why I've been really ringing this alarm bell on, you know, making sure that all of our strategies that we're employing are going after how we can energize our base and tell them an exciting story too. And this is what brings back to, it's not just about the top of the ticket. Like, the top of the ticket plays a role, but we're also, you know, like I said, we're tracking 293 races. There's a deep bench of amazing leadership that's really inspiring, that's women, that's new people coming into politics that are running for office in swing states at the federal level, at the state level, at the local level. And part of how we have won elections since Trump in places like Virginia has been through this reverse coattails effect. You know, this idea that people get excited because there's a prosecutor who's has a vision for their office that is pro-community and is about helping people of color and not just criminalizing them. And that kind of message is really exciting for those voters. It makes them want to vote and come out. And when they get there, they'll vote for Biden. But Biden may not be what's inspiring them to come out, if that makes sense. It's a combination of that. Some people are going to be motivated by Trump. Other people are going to be motivated by this local prosecutor. You know, other people are going to be motivated by Biden. And it's putting all of that together is the only way that we're going to get there. But you're absolutely right that it's very dangerous that we have been, as a sort of Democratic side, we've been up against a base expansion strategy on the right, and we haven't really matched it on the left. But that's exactly what Way to Win has been trying to do. It is scary, but I think we can get there.
Where are you on the optimism versus pessimism scale?
I am an eternal optimist. I am optimistic. We can't do anything else but just put everything we have into this, you know? It's just like digging deeper, doing more, giving more. That's the message that I've been putting out there. And it's hard sometimes in the face of what's going on, but I believe that we will win. One thing I've been feeling since this pandemic is like, we have had the worst leadership at the top during this time. You know, it has been catastrophic failure. And at the same time, we have seen some amazing things happening in communities. It has taught us in a way that how we are interconnected, like how we have to work collectively to get through the crisis. And there's a piece of me that has just seen the kind of the depth of like humanity and like willingness for people to work together and come together across differences that I find really inspiring. And I find it is part of what gives me hope and optimism.
Jen, what's your pitch to donors? Why should they join Way to Win?
For a donor who is looking to make an impact, like who's motivated by wanting to get Trump out of office, but sees that there's a, you know, this whole what got us into this mess does go deeper than Trump. It goes beyond Trump too. And that in many ways, Trump is a symptom of the problem and not the problem itself. That there's a way that by being a part of Way to Win, You can support organizations either through Way to Win, through our funds, or we advise a lot of donors who want to give directly to organizations. So like we encourage donors having direct relationships with groups and can help them do that. So it's not so much about giving money to Way to Win. It's more like being a part of Way to Win and being a part of what it is we're offering, not only to be able to leverage dollars where like you could put in a chunk of money to this strategy and realize that it's a bigger $80 million plan that you've helped to support. Like that feels good. And the idea that, you know, we're just like on the cutting edge of the work that needs to happen because we're in such relationship with the groups on this big scale. We know what the needs are and we know in real time where dollars can be most useful. And so it really is, I think, an amazing way to like live your values, contribute to this moment, and work in a bigger, broader community for a kind of change that can't happen in one election cycle. And it's only going to happen over the long term. Certainly, when you look to the conservative movement and the Koch brothers network, I mean, that's the kind of thing that they've done. And so we do see ourselves as kind of a progressive version of that, where we're really trying to build deep, long-term progressive power and working with donors and with activists and leaders together as part of a community to do that.
You mentioned, I think, about 140 donors. To join that group, if someone were interested in, like, is this super wealthy people? Is there a minimum that you need to be able to come up with?
Well, we would love to help advise donors of any size. You know, it's part of what we're trying to do is provide information. We make a lot of information public, and anyone who wants to support this strategy, we want to be helpful. If you did want to join the Way to Win community, there's a range, there's a membership model, and there's a range of options. The minimum is what we call a founding member. I believe it's $5,000 to start. And so then we have members who give $5,000 to support Way to Win, and then they might give another $5,000 that supports the strategy. Or
is that both men and women?
Yes, we have. Yes, it's men and women. We have donors who do much more than that, you know, who move millions of dollars with us and in partnership. So it's a wide mix.
And if someone does, like, what they have access to sort of the information that you have about these groups. I mean, how much leeway do they have? What's that relationship between an individual donor and what happens with their money?
It's a total mix. It's based on people's preferences. So some people will just be, you know, feeling, I trust you. I support your strategy. I think you really have your finger on the pulse of what's going on. I want to give a donation and I want you to put it where it's needed most. Like, I want you to actually just make the decisions because you're in touch in a real-time way with what's happening. So we get a lot of that. And then, you know, some people certainly want to support work in certain states. You know, I want to support Black organizing work that fits with your strategy. I want to support climate justice organizing that fits within your strategy. So we actually can provide that level of analysis for people. And it's a mix, like whether they'll give to our fund or whether we'll advise with them and say, okay, here are the 10 groups that we suggest you write a check to if what you want to do is support XYZ. So it's a combination of those things.
Jen, is there a question about Way to Win that I haven't asked that you'd like to be asked?
Well, maybe we're launching a PAC arm, and that's a way that people can, like anyone can support, you know, like it could be a smaller dollar kind of way of supporting the strategy. So
tell me about that PAC and any other new programs that you are working on.
Yeah, so we have been working on a PAC strategy that really does two things. And one is it gives donors of any level the chance to support all of the down ballot candidates that you really may not know about. You're going to know about the top of the ticket. You're going to know about different Senate races that are important. You know, you probably know about some congressional candidates that you should be looking at and funding. But you may not know the deeper into states, state assembly, state senate, local city commissioner races that are actually important, where there's good candidates who are progressive on issues and who are bringing a more reflective democracy. So through the Way to Lead PAC, we have the ability to support a range of those kinds of candidates. The what we call the reverse coattails kind of down ballot effect. We're going through a process where we're endorsing candidates across all the states that the groups have told us are important to them and the groups we fund, and also through our own analysis. So it will be a great way to actually support those down ticket races that you otherwise may not know about that are multi-issue and multiracial candidates. And then the second part is that we're also, again, seeing more of a need for like political advertising that amplifies the organizing work that's happening on the ground. We've seen like there's a lot of super PACs that are out there right now and that have been doing work since last year and early 2020. And they've been really more focused on the swing voter, you know, the white swing voter in the Midwest. They've been more focused on actually attacking Trump for the most part of this early part of the cycle. And so there's just a need and a gap out there for like political ads, political videos that speak to the multiracial coalition and that actually inspire that kind of base expansion. The other example being the Lincoln Project, which has come up a lot, which is, you know, Republican run and is making ads that people like, Democrats like, because they're effective and they're good. They're good at that. And so we are seeing a need on the left to do more of that. And so we're trying to fund that work through our PAC and through Way to Win. And then in some cases, we're also just like working with creative teams who want to make that kind of content and putting it out under Way to Lead. Way to Lead is our PAC.
Well, I am very honored to talk to you about this. I'm so glad that you're working hard on the right side to help us win. Anything else you want to say?
No, thank you so much. It was really great to talk to you. I really appreciate the time and all the great questions. Thanks.
Thank you. That was Jen Ancona and Way to Win. She's at waytowin.us. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at greatbattlefield.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.